Now, with Election Day just a week away, we are taking some time this week to look at some of the major issues facing the country and what's at stake for those issues in the election. We'll talk about health care and environment later this week, but for this first discussion, we're looking at early education and child care. We have two guests, Linda Smith, director of the Early Education Initiative at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Amy O'Leary, director of the Early Education for All campaign at Strategies for Children. Linda and Amy, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
It's great to be here.
I forgot to let you both say hey there. Sorry about that. So, Amy, I am going to start with you because I want to make sure we define our term. Early education, let's define it. It's different from just childcare. Are we talking about a specific age range? So, let's term it out.
When we think about early education, we are really talking about children's development starting at birth, even prenatally, till age 8. And we have other terms like childcare, early education, kindergarten, preschool, but we really are talking about a child's development from birth through age 8.
Okay, and Linda, you have some significant experience here. You helped build the program used by the military. You also ran Head Start for the Department of Health and Human Services. If we are talking about building a program on a national level for the category that Amy just told us about, based on what you experienced in doing that for the military, is it doable? What would the obstacles be? Can you flesh that out for us a little bit?
Well, I absolutely think it is doable, but I think one of the things that we have to get our heads around in this country is, and we just released a report yesterday that looked at this in 25 states, we actually have to figure out how much we need. We haven't had an honest evaluation of what's needed in the country, and then sort of what is that going to cost, and then we have to figure out who's going to pay for it, because we have programs right now where the cost to produce a quality program for children costs more than our parents can afford to pay. So we have what we call a gap between what it costs to do this and then what parents can pay. And who's going to pay that gap, I think, is what we as a nation have yet to figure out. So I think as we move forward, and this was one of the things that we did with the military, we understood what we had, how much we needed, and we set a goal of how to get there and figured out how to pay for it. And I think we did move almost to, you know, to complete towards the end of the work that I did when I was there. We were getting very close to the goal of what we needed. So as a nation, we haven't done that yet, and we need to do that so we understand who's going to pay for this.
All right. So, Amy, briefly, paint a simple picture of urgency for us. Is this making some changes, making some investments is a pretty big deal, or are we at 3-alarm fire? Are we somewhere in between? How urgent is the moment?
Well, when you consider we created and started the For All campaign in 2002, and we've been running a campaign with no election date, and here we are in 2020. And while we have made progress in Massachusetts, we know that COVID and the health crisis has highlighted so many of the inequities in so many systems, and it's also raised broad, concrete awareness of how integral early education and care is to our economy, to the well-being of children and families, and really the future of our Commonwealth. And I think where we are right now is living in this day-to-day, these kind of unsung heroines and warriors who are doing the work of serving children and families every day. During COVID, you know, it has certainly added a layer of complexity to this. One of the things I think the state has really focused its attention on, which is going to be a big benefit, is getting good information to answer Linda's question. What do we need? You know, where are the children, and how are we going to support children where they are? So what we've seen is the Department of Early Education now is doing a weekly survey to better understand supply and demand for early education and care programs in Massachusetts. And at Strategies for Children, we commissioned a parent survey working with Beacon Research to better understand where parents are right now. And what we found out is 79% of parents are concerned that they will not be able to work without formal childcare arrangements. and that we know that women are really mostly are more affected by this, with 44% of employed women report that their employer is offering flexible work hours, and only 13% right now have access to paid family leave. And again, that's a policy where we passed in Massachusetts and we're working on the implementation. But what I would say, what we're hearing from the field right now, is parents and children need support right now. And I think this idea of making it a public good, the way we think about funding K to 12 education, should be next.
Great. So let's use that to dive into some specific policy proposals now. Perfect. Let's talk about Elizabeth Warren. She made this a big part of her platform in the Democratic primary. Here she is speaking on the campaign trail back in April of 2019.
Access to high quality child care and education during the early stages of a child's life should not be a privilege reserved for the children of the rich. It should be a right for every single child in America. And that's why I'm proposing a big structural change: universal child care and early education for all our babies.
So, Linda, you were critical of Warren's plan. Can you tell us about that?
Well, I think I agree in principle with the idea that this should be something that all Americans have access to. I think it was more the sort of the mechanics of what she was proposing at the time. And I go back to at the time, because one of the things that was proposed was a direct from federal to local funding stream. And I think that having, as you said, been at the Department of Health and Human Services and overseen grants, the federal government does not have the capacity to manage grants to local communities. We do need the involvement of the states, and how that looks is the question. So I think it was a structural issue in what she was proposing, not a philosophical issue, because certainly we know that children, especially children from low-income families, benefit the most from high-quality programs, but are the least able to have access and to have their parents afford it. So I think the mechanics of what needs to happen is what we're going to have to figure out in the next couple of years. Back to your question or your comment on this whole issue, I would go back and say, I think Amy was being nice. I would say we are very close to a three-alarm situation in this country, because of the instability of what we have out there and the fact that we've got programs barely hanging on across this country. We've seen a closure rate of at least 10% of our capacity right now, according to our national polls. And I think that's going to get worse, because parents are hesitating to go back to childcare in the next, probably until we have a vaccine, in which case providers don't have any revenue coming in, and how are they going to hang on for probably the next year? And I think that's where I would go so far as to say we needed Congress to take action on the supplemental. We haven't seen that yet. The states need the funding to help these providers stay in business. And I think the one last comment I'd make is that I'm not sure our audience always understands that, unlike public education in the K-12 system, child care and most early learning programs do not get public funding. So when the parents stop bringing their children, the program is just simply out of money. And that's why we've got such a bad situation in this country.
So in our remaining time, I want to make sure to get to the Biden proposal and to the president's proposal. So let's start with Biden. Amy, I'll turn to you. Joe Biden says he wants free universal pre-K to provide funds to ensure that there's an early childhood development expert in every community health center, grants to help cities place early childhood development experts in their pediatrician offices, where there's a high percentage of Medicaid and Children's Health Insurance Program patients. He also uses the term free universal preschool. So the scope of that and the cost of that, is it realistic? On the other end, does it go far enough?
I think if we really look at the last, decade of not investing in early education and kind of flipping the question, we don't question our commitment to K-12. We've made a social contract. We believe that we need to make that same contract thinking about younger children in this country. And I think all of the proposals, you know, now, before we used to cheer if a candidate mentioned the word child or child care, and now we know we have to hold them to the proposals that they are considering as a, during the election period. And we know it is going to be a significant investment, but we have tried to kind of work around the edges and make progress with low cost, you know, high impact solutions, which just has not moved the needle far enough for children. I started this work in 2002. So you think about where those 3 and 4 year olds are that I was originally advocating for, you know, they're in their 20s now. So how are we really going to be serious about, and I agree with Linda, we've been waiting for the stimulus. You know, the state has said they're waiting till, you know, after the election to see what happens. We don't have a state budget kind of finalized in Massachusetts yet. But I think we can't be afraid to ask for millions and millions of dollars in the same way that we have seen other, you know, we don't talk about transportation if we're going to end transportation. We need to have that same kind of thinking about children.
Okay. Now, Linda, this was one of the issues that both parties speak to. When President Trump was running in 2016, he promised offering tax credits and rebates for parents to help pay for childcare or reimburse stay-at-home parents. And here's what his daughter, Ivanka Trump, said at the Republican National Convention this August.
4 years ago, I told you my father would focus on making childcare affordable and accessible. In President Trump's first term, we secured the largest ever increase for childcare funding, giving more than 800,000 low-income families great childcare at a cost they can afford.
Linda, is that correct? And what have you seen on the Republican side in terms of policy proposals in this election cycle?
Well, I think there was some truth in that. Yes, it was the biggest increase we had seen in the Child Care Development Block Grant in the history of the program. That is true. However, that program only reaches about 18% of the eligible children out there around the country. And those are children who are at less than 85% of state median income for their parents. So to say that we've made it affordable and available for all children, that just doesn't work. The numbers don't add up. We definitely, you know, and Amy said this, we need significant investments in early care and education in this country. And the, you know, we are just going to have to rethink this whole thing. And while we appreciate the support we've had, and we have had broad bipartisan support here in Washington, in terms of the debate here in Washington around the amount of money going that is being discussed, it's anywhere from $25 billion on the conservative Republican side to $50 billion on the Democratic side. So we're not talking insignificant amounts of money. But we need that money, and we need to get this thing resolved for this country.
Amy, we have about a minute left, so last question. We know women are being forced to leave the workforce at an alarming rate due to the pandemic. In September, that was a rate 4 times higher than men. NPR reported earlier today that if you break down those numbers, Latino women left the workforce at almost 3 times the rate of white women and more than 4 times the rate of African Americans. How do you think about equity as we're talking about these policy proposals, just briefly?
Thank you for the question. I think this cannot be a women's issue. While it is impacting women, we need everybody to get behind these issues and think about children that you know and what they deserve. I think we're talking to employers who are worried that the progress that we have made for people of color and women in the workforce will disappear in a matter of months because of the limited choices that people are going to have. We also know the intersection of health, K-12, and employers are all impacting the way that we're making decisions. So we need more allies, not fewer, to really make progress that's going to make a difference.
And that is Amy O'Leary, Director of the Early Education for All campaign at Strategies for Children, a 501c3, and Linda Smith, Director of the Early Childhood Initiative at the Bipartisan Policy Center. Amy and Linda, thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.